The questions have become familiar. Who missed the warning signs of an attack that killed thousands of Americans? Who failed to connect the dots? How much did the president know, and when did he know it? Those questions have loomed over the closed-door congressional hearings on Capitol Hill. A joint Senate-House panel has been exploring intelligence failures. And those very same questions have been asked before on Capitol Hill, following the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor in 1941.
News of the unprovoked attacks is flashed to 130 million shocked Americans. Early news reports are hectic, often contradictory, but from the president himself comes word that the whole vast Pacific is lighted by a war flame.
In 1945, just months after the U.S. victory in World War II and the death of President Franklin Roosevelt, a joint House-Senate committee took a long, often harsh look at why the U.S. was not prepared for Pearl Harbor. NPR's Andy Bowers has this look at the similarities between then and now.
Although Pearl Harbor is often called a surprise attack, there were warning signs, but they came from a source so secret Congress had to wait until after the war to discuss them in public. A year before the attack, the U.S. had broken the electronic code used by Japanese diplomats, so not only could Washington read what Tokyo was thinking as the two negotiated to avoid war, but it also intercepted a number of suspicious messages. This scene from the 1970 movie Tora, 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 which recreates the Pearl Harbor story in intricate detail, showed a mock-up of the mass of wires and plugs used to break the code.
This little machine enables us to intercept every word that passes between Tokyo and all Japanese embassies. We're decoding the stuff quicker than the Japanese embassy right here in Washington.
No wonder you decided to call it Operation Magic.
Columbia University Emeritus historian Henry Graff worked as a magic decoder. He says the U.S. continued to use magic throughout the war, so Congress couldn't reveal the Pearl Harbor warnings because it would have blown the secret.
They could not indicate to the world that we were reading the Japanese code. That would be an act of lack of patriotism at the least and treachery at the worst.
Still, Army Chief of Staff General George C. Marshall worried during the 1944 presidential race that Republicans might use Pearl Harbor to embarrass Roosevelt. So as Marshall later told Congress, he wrote GOP candidate Thomas Dewey a private letter, imploring him not to reveal magic. Dewey kept the secret, Roosevelt was elected to an unprecedented fourth term, and Democrats also held on to both houses of Congress. Understandably, the Republicans were frustrated, in part because many thought the Roosevelt administration had failed to connect the dots.
Throughout the war, Republicans were asking for an investigation by Congress into what happened at Pearl Harbor.
Eric Schickler is an associate professor of history at the University of California, Berkeley, and a specialist on Congress.
Democrats were generally in a position of resisting and trying to delay an investigation because they saw that Republicans were likely to try to use it to blame FDR and senior administration officials for what happened.
It might surprise younger generations that there was so much political wrangling during World War II, especially since the popular culture of the time portrayed unquestioning patriotism.
Let's remember Pearl Harbor as we go to meet the foe. Let's remember Pearl Harbor as we did the Alamo.
But Congress was still Congress. In fact, historian Eric Schickler says even with Democrats in control of both houses, Congress launched roughly 100 investigations during the war, looking into things like military contracts and domestic price controls.
I think there's a tendency now to assume that there was this united front in all ways, but I think actually at the time, people made a pretty firm division that when it came to, say, military strategy of the moment, there was unity, but when it came to all sorts of policies relating to the war, there was plenty of room for dissent and discussion.
But once the war ended, the gloves really came off. And on November 15, 1945, a carefully assembled committee of five House members and five senators, each delegation with three Democrats and two Republicans, came to order.
Explosive headlines from Washington. At the Senate office building, the Pearl Harbor inquiry opens. Quietly standing by are retired Rear Admiral Kimmel and Lieutenant General Short, who held command at Pearl Harbor.
Admiral Husband E. Kimmel and General Walter Short were already well known to the nation. An earlier, less comprehensive inquiry had mostly blamed them for the debacle. But Republicans on the committee were determined to show that the blame went much higher than Kimmel and Short. And there were several pieces of intelligence that, in retrospect anyway, foreshadowed an attack.
Pearl Harbor is very, very, it's a breakdown of intelligence. It's very much like what happened on 9/11.
Donald Goldstein is a University of Pittsburgh historian and co-author of one of the seminal works about Pearl Harbor, At Dawn We Slept. Just as September 11th has the Phoenix Memo and the alleged 20th hijacker, Goldstein says Pearl Harbor had messages nicknamed the Bomb Plot and the War Warning, which have since become infamous.
Now that we know and we put it all together, you and I would say, wow, it had to be a conspiracy. They were bunglers. Well, you look at 9/11, you could say the same thing. These guys have been in flight school. Now we know it. At the time, we're not looking. So what happens is it woulda, coulda, shoulda type thing.
Among other juicy intercepts before Pearl Harbor, the U.S. learned that if Japan planned to go to war with America, it would insert three code words into a radio weather report. The words were east wind, rain. But the committee heard conflicting testimony about whether U.S. intelligence ever detected that code being sent. Historian Henry Graff.
That message has never turned up. And that would have been the smoking gun. And it has never been found.
And just as we recently learned, the National Security Agency intercepted two vague warnings on September 10th that something would happen the next day, Pearl Harbor had what's called the 14-part message. Washington received the first 13 parts the night before the attack. They instructed Japan's ambassadors to cut off negotiations with the U.S. The final part came in the morning of the attack. As this recreation from Tora, Tora, Tora shows, it contained a key time reference.
Now listen to this, the 14th part. Will the ambassadors please submit our reply to the United States government at precisely 1 p.m. December 7th, your time?
1 p.m.
That turned out to be just minutes before the attack. Washington was concerned enough to send warnings to U.S. forces all over the Pacific, but the telegram to Pearl Harbor wasn't marked urgent and was delivered after the bombs started falling. When the Congressional Committee finally heard from the two Pearl Harbor commanders in 1946, they argued, as they would until their deaths, that the brass in Washington failed to pass them crucial intelligence. Admiral Kimmel, in this scratchy newsreel recording, testified that he was not prepared because he lacked one important thing.
That vital need was the information available in Washington from the intercepted dispatches, which told when and where Japan would probably strike. I did not get this information.
At the time, and to this day, some critics charge that President Roosevelt not only knew of the Pearl Harbor attack in advance, but actually provoked it to force a reluctant U.S. into war. Historian Michael Gannon, author of Pearl Harbor Betrayed, says the majority of the Congressional Committee firmly rejected that conclusion.
The majority report established that there was no evidence that Roosevelt or his secretaries of state, war, or navy coerced or tricked Japan into attacking the United States.
Although it did spread blame beyond just the two Pearl Harbor commanders and said their superiors in Washington shared responsibility. Two Republican senators dissented and issued a harsher minority report. Gannon says although it also stopped short of accusing Roosevelt of provocation, it condemned his policy that Japan fire the first shot.
The conclusion went on to say that the United States should have made a preemptive strike rather than simply wait to be hit by the Japanese.
That's a lesson the current White House has apparently taken from September 11th, as it considers preemptive strikes against terrorists. President Bush also wants to restructure the government to improve defense and limit interagency squabbling. That's exactly what Harry Truman did after the nation learned what went wrong at Pearl Harbor. Andy Bowers, NPR News.